I think what I'd like to do is to basically tell a story of my client and talk about what Joe is talking about is the substance of what habeas means in the real world of Guantanamo. And the reason why I think this is important, and Joe may have mentioned this, is because, as some of you know, Obama recently signed the National Defense Authorization Act, which authorizes indefinite detention of U.S. citizens. And the excuse that some of our senators and some of the ones on the Democratic side gave for why this is not such a big problem is that, well, they still have habeas corpus. So let me tell you a little bit about the problem with habeas corpus. First of all, there is no right to counsel. What that means is that people who are indefinitely detained, such as the people at Guantanamo, depend on volunteer lawyers, such as Joe Margulies. Luckily, they have some brilliant lawyers, and that's one of the things that has been wonderful working on this case. I haven't been doing it as long as Joe, but some of the best lawyers in the country, such as Joe Margulies, have worked on these cases. But the problem with being a volunteer lawyer, and I'm a volunteer lawyer, is we don't get our expenses paid. So what that means is that the government can make this incredibly expensive. So very few people are going to be able to afford, even if the lawyer is willing to work for free. Because what the government does is, first of all, the lawyer has to get a security clearance. Secondly, the government classifies every single document in the case. And every pleading, even if they file a motion for a continuance, they classify it, which that means for us to read it and respond to it, we have to get on a plane, fly to a secure facility to look at the document and to write our response. If there's any translation issues, we have to hire a certified translator that has a security clearance to do the translations. The government also has the power to classify documents above our security clearance. Not Joe's, because Joe has the highest level security clearance. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But let me tell you about my client. He's an uneducated, his name is Shawali Khan. He's still there at Guantanamo. Uneducated farm boy who shortly before 9/11 moved to the city of Kandahar because there was a drought on his farm. In November of 2002, he was captured by Afghans and turned over to the Americans. And the basis for the Americans to send him to Guantanamo was a single informant that said he was plotting attacks on a U.S. military base near Kandahar. There was no investigation done, no corroboration sought. They sent him to Guantanamo Bay. He had no lawyer for 5 years at Guantanamo. I finally became his lawyer in 2008. We got a habeas hearing in 2010. Now, a habeas hearing is not like a trial. The government calls no witnesses. All they do is they present report. They're allowed to rely entirely on hearsay. So what they do is they submit intelligence report, which is a report from a U.S. intelligence collector near Kandahar. And these fellas were living in armed compounds, knew nothing about the history. They relied on translators. And they would invite people in to give them information. The court is required to presume that the translator, that the intelligence collector's work was above reproach. That is, if he says this person seemed reliable, the judge is required to credit that information. So if this were a criminal case, we would want to know everything about the informant. I'm a criminal defense attorney by trade. The first thing we'd want to know is, as the film talks about, was the informant paid a bounty? Because at that time period, they were being paid $10,000 routinely to turn in somebody that they say is an Al-Qaeda fighter, no questions asked. So that would be the most important question to ask. Well, the government's response is, give me the file on the informant. Well, the file is not reasonably available. Now, that is the standard. If it's not reasonably available, they don't have to give it to me. So as long as they say it's not reasonably available, I'm not entitled to it under the law. I said, well, give me his name, and then we'll do our own investigation. Because we actually had, first of all, I could talk to my client and say, tell me about this guy. Is he, do you know him? Or I could hire, we actually did have an investigator in Kandahar who got affidavits, visited my client's neighborhood, got affidavits from the shopkeepers around where he was working at the time he got captured, got affidavits from members of his family. So we had someone on the ground that could do an investigation. Well, the government's response was, well, the name of the informant is classified. You can't have it. And if I did have it, I couldn't speak it to my client or to an investigator. So at the hearing, the government truthfully told the judge, well, there is no evidence that the informant was paid a bounty, which is true. There's no evidence in the record that he was paid a bounty. The judge said, well, I still need some corroboration. So the government lawyer said, well, we have a report which says that at the time my client, Shawali Khan, was captured, he had in his possession a handwritten note which was very incriminating. It contained some detonation codes for an IED. So I said, well, let me see the note. Is it in his handwriting? We don't have the note. It was not preserved. We just have a report that says he had the note. Well, let me see the report, because maybe the report, if I looked at it, it might show that it's from the same informant that's selling the information. Well, the report is classified above your security clearance level. I said, okay, Joe Margulies. He has the top level of security clearance. He's going to come in as my co-counsel, and Joe agreed to do this, signed an affidavit saying he's willing to come in as my co-counsel just for the limited purpose of looking at this report, because it would be too much. The government had said it would be a grave danger. It would cause a grave danger to national security for me to see it, but Joe should be able to see it. Well, the government's response to that was, it's not necessary for Joe to see it, because we're going to tell you what it says. We're going to summarize it for you. And their summary was, it says that there's some U.S. official that actually saw the note. That's all you need to know. If the U.S. official that saw it wrote the report, judge must credit it. So it turns out that what the government said was a lie. And the reason we know that is because the date of the report was November 13th. And when we got the WikiLeaks, it showed that the government first made contact with Shawali Khan on November 15th. So there's no possible way that there was any U.S. official in Shawali Khan's home on November 13th. So the judge has now taken this under advisement as to whether he was lied to and whether a fraud was committed on the court, and that's where we stand. But in fact, if it wasn't for Julian Assange, my client would have no hope at all. So.